Joining us is Dimitri Lascaris, Canadian attorney, independent journalist, and political activist based in Montreal and Kalamata, Greece, a former high-profile securities class action litigator who recovered over $450 million for investors. He left corporate law in 2016 to pursue independent journalism and peace activism. He reports from conflict zones like Lebanon, which is why we have him today. In 2024, he received the Serena Shim Award for Uncompromised Integrity in Journalism. Thank you, Dimitri, so much for joining us here on Deprogram.
Pleasure to be here with you both. Thank you, Aaron, for having me.
It is our pleasure. So let's talk about Lebanon. In many ways, that conflict is usually overshadowed by whatever else is going on in the region, if something else is going on in the region. It was overshadowed. It was during the peak of the Gaza genocide. It is being overshadowed now to a lesser extent, but it's still kind of viewed as like sort of, oh, and by the way, there's also Lebanon in wake of the conflict between the U.S., Israel, and Iran. Why is Lebanon important and what's going on?
Let me first of all give a shout out to the resistance in Lebanon. Outside of Palestine, the Lebanese have experienced more civilian casualties than any member of the axis of resistance, including Iran, as admirable as Iran's resistance has been. And Lebanon has a much smaller population. So as a percentage of the population, it has suffered vastly more casualties than any other member of the axis of resistance outside of Palestine. And I've been there five times since the genocide began in late 2023, including most recently about 10 days ago. And the level of destruction I saw in South Lebanon is comparable to what I wouldn't say is quite as bad, but it's now becoming comparable to what we saw and continue to see in Gaza. So the Lebanese people are absolutely critical to this struggle. And, outside of Palestine, I think they've made the greatest sacrifice of all.
Do you think that Israelis are planning to annex southern Lebanon, particularly south of the Litani River, or maybe even more?
I have no doubt that they want to. This is an ambition they've harbored for decades. Whether they believe that's possible, judging from the statements that have been coming out of Israel's military leaders, I don't know. They, for example, recently admitted to the Israeli media that they don't believe they can disarm Hezbollah, and that's going to have to be done by the Lebanese army. And I don't think any astute observer believes that the Lebanese army is even going to try it, let alone accomplish that task. So if they're not going to disarm Hezbollah, if the Lebanese army can't disarm Hezbollah, and if Hezbollah won't do it voluntarily, which is clearly not the case, how are they going to occupy that territory? This is something they've repeatedly failed to do. And right now, the Israeli army is a mess. It's an absolute mess because of all of the casualties they have sustained, the fact that this military force is constructed for short-term wars and it's been continuously engaged in multi-front warfare for now 2.5 years. So I think it's a pipe dream, but I have no doubt that there are people in Israel, particularly people like Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, who continue to harbor this ambition.
Even now, Dimitri, what's going on, man? I am super curious about what is taking place internally in Israel with the pressure that has been applied from the standpoint of the war, because they went through a 12-day war. They've just gone through another war where Iran has been effectively hitting their targets continuously. What is the pressure that's being applied to the government itself under the barrage of missiles, under the, as you pointed out, the failure in their campaign to take southern Lebanon? Do we know what's going on internally, societal-wise, in Israel?
Well, if the polls are to be believed, Jamal, and we have good reason to doubt how accurate they are, and especially whether they reflect the informed opinion of the Jewish Israeli public, but if they're to be taken at face value, a large majority of the Israeli Jewish population, who constitute about 75% of the population of 1948 Israel, want the war to continue. And they're quite upset that it stopped, which is absolutely remarkable. There are, there's a significant segment of the Israeli Jewish population that is growing discontented with this war, and you've seen somewhat larger protests. But the polls consistently show that a large majority want this to go on until they have achieved complete victory, which I think from their perspective means the total destruction of all resistance to Israeli hegemony.
Dimitri, can we talk about the Israeli Jewish liberals? Because, you know, when I used to visit Israel in like the 90s and aughts, they existed, right? And a lot I met a lot of ordinary Israelis who, Israeli Jews who wanted to live side by side in a two-state solution. That's just, those people are gone, right? It seems to me like the opposition, whatever opposition there is to Netanyahu boils down to, it's not concern for the Palestinians or for anyone else right. in the region. It's a different, liberalism is gone. Am I misreading that?
Well, if you regard the statements by Yair Lapid, who is sort of the standard bearer today of the Israeli liberal class, that is gone. It's all over. I mean, Yair Lapid has been completely supportive of the Israeli genocide. He is fanatically opposed to this two-state delusion. He wants the war on Iran to continue. He wants the war on Hezbollah to continue. There's no indication that his party, which is inherited the Israeli liberal movement, has the slightest interest in coexisting with Palestinians or with Lebanese for that matter. So I think Israeli liberalism is effectively dead.
How did that happen?
Well, I think it happened because of us in the West. We basically protected Israel from the consequences of its crimes, no matter how heinous they were. And so the entire Israeli political elite has become increasingly emboldened over the years to believe that there's no consequences for their depravity. And we should anticipate that it's just going to get worse unless and until the leadership of Israel is held accountable. We created this Frankenstein. And it ain't going to get any better. It's just going to get worse.
I'm curious on something else. From the standpoint of Lebanon, there is a weird relationship in regards to Lebanon and its population. And I'm saying this kind of strange. The president, in this case, seemingly joined hands with Israel, effectively saying, all right, got a ceasefire. As they continue the murderous campaign in southern Lebanon, you don't foresee this notion of a civil war in this case, because it seems that there's a contradiction between the government of Lebanon versus the population of Lebanon. What is going on with this strange engagement? Like you said, they wouldn't fire a shot in anger at the Israeli military, and yet they would claim that there's a ceasefire. Obviously, there is no ceasefire, correct?
No, Israel is... by the resistance's count, committed over 200 ceasefire violations, and which we should be clear which "quote unquote" ceasefire we're talking about.
I don't understand the American media. Sorry to interrupt, but like the Western media constantly portrays it as like we have a shaky ceasefire that is still holding, even though Israel is continuing to fire.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Am I an idiot, or do I just not understand English? I mean, what does that mean? I mean, a ceasefire means that nobody's shooting.
You ain't an idiot, but the people who believe these Western media may be. I mean, the fact of the matter is that when the corporate media uses the words fragile and shaky to describe these ceasefires, what they mean is that the resistance is restraining itself, but Israel is going hog wild as if nothing has changed. From the very moment that the 10 days, so again, let's clarify what ceasefire we're talking about. The one that went into effect, or was supposed to have gone into effect when Iran and the U.S. started a ceasefire, that was supposed to include Lebanon, and the Pakistani leadership made that absolutely clear. Yeah. And there's no way that the Iranians would have thrown the Lebanese under a bus and done a ceasefire that excluded them. So they just flushed that down the toilet. Then they came along with a 10-day ceasefire, okay, right, which came into effect a few days ago. From the very moment, even the Lebanese army said within the first hours of that ceasefire that Israel had continued shelling villages in the south of Lebanon, amongst other ceasefire violations. Now the ceasefire violations, since that one was supposed to come into effect, are in excess of 200. Yesterday they killed a Lebanese journalist, a widely respected Lebanese journalist, during a ceasefire, and seriously wounded her comrade, a photographer, even the Lebanese government was forced to say that this was a crime against humanity. This happened during a ceasefire. By the way, she was killed in a double tap strike, which is a war crime. So the what's very interesting about this, though, is that this time Hezbollah is not restraining itself. In the period from November 2024 until February 28th of this year, when the war in Iran began, the most recent war, Hezbollah effectively did not retaliate at all to the thousands of ceasefire violations by Israel. But now it's retaliating. Yesterday, it reported 4 military operations against Israeli forces in the south of Lebanon. It just reported another one an hour ago. It's published video of its missile and drone attacks on these forces. So the rules of the game have changed. This time, they are not going to sit idly by and allow Israel to get away with these crimes during a so-called ceasefire.
It seems like the rules of the game have changed for Iran, too. Two questions. Why is this time different for Hezbollah and for the Iranians? And why and how closely do you think Iran is coordinating with Hezbollah?
I think the rules of the game have changed for a variety of reasons. First of all, the Iranian military and political leadership, I think, is unanimous now that they can't trust the Americans. There's no deal to be done with this regime, nor, frankly, with the Biden regime. But this one in particular is completely treacherous and perfidious. So they've gotten that memo in spades. And I think that the Lebanese, the bulk of the Lebanese population has understood that there's no peace deal to be done with Israel. Even if you were to disarm Hezbollah, that would just embolden the Israelis to be even more aggressive in their land theft and their attacks on the civilian population. So it's partly a reality check. It's partly the fact that they see that the Israeli military is greatly weakened, that the American military is greatly weakened. They've been much weakened by the war in Ukraine. By the debacle in Afghanistan, their munitions are highly depleted. So I think that they see this as the moment, the greatest opportunity that they will have to finally defeat the U.S. empire in the region of West Asia. And I think they're right about that. This is the best opportunity they've ever had.
Why didn't they all go hog wild after October 7th, 2023? I mean, that seemed to me like a good opportunity to also defend the Gazans.
Well, I do believe that that was a surprise to them. You know, although the line is that was all orchestrated from Tehran and that Hezbollah was in on it, there's good reason to believe that they weren't prepared for that at all. Mm-hmm. And I think that they themselves were a bit surprised by how ferocious the Israelis responded to all of that. Mm. And it took them some time to organize themselves to put up a fight when they knew it was going to be very, very costly to them themselves. And now, as I say, I think this is a fight to, I think what we're witnessing is effectively a fight to the death. One side or another is going to be destroyed by this. Now, when I say destroyed, I don't mean that the United States is going to be destroyed, but I mean that the United States will be driven from the region, or Iran is going to be destroyed.
Inshallah. Yeah. I mean, really.
It's also existential for Iran, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, they've done everything in their power to avoid a war. And yet this war was always coming, especially with the fall of Syria. Have you been surprised that they've been so consistent in standing by Lebanon in this?
We have some breaking news that's very pertinent to our conversation here. Trump is ordering the U.S. military to shoot and kill Iranian small boats in the Strait of Hormuz.
Well, good luck with that. First of all, how are they going to do that? Are they going to do it from the air? Those things shoot out, you know, they travel at high speeds. They're coming out of caves in the coastline. They haven't been able to do it thus far. And I don't see any way they're going to do that without inserting naval vessels into the Strait of Hormuz, in which case the naval vessels are going to become sitting ducks. So this is Donald Trump is just thrashing about senselessly. But I don't think his goal has changed. I think his goal and the goal of the genocidal Israeli entity have been the same from day one. And that is the Libya solution. They want to turn Iran into a failed state. Yes. Everybody says it's a regime change. I don't think that that's all that they want, because if they installed, let's say, the son of the Shah, the Iranian people might overthrow him again and they'll find themselves back where they are now. So they want to ensure that no matter who is ruling Tehran, who's in power there, whether it be a puppet of Washington or an Islamic government or some other government that's determined to maintain Iran's sovereignty, Iran will be incapable of defending itself. It will be incapable of resisting U.S. and Israeli hegemony in the region. This is what they want. They want to destroy Iran as a functioning sovereign state. And so all those people out there in the Iranian diaspora, you know, who say, oh, we don't like this government and we oppose this government and we support what Israel and the United States are doing because we think they're liberating the Iranian people. You deluded freaks need to come to Jesus and understand that the goal here is to destroy the country. It's not about liberating anybody. And frankly, I think that there has been a significant awakening in that diaspora. Some fanatics still cling to this delusion, but I think people are waking up to that. That is the ultimate goal here. And the best thing, the only thing actually that stands between the destruction of Iran and the preservation of the Iranian people is the current government of Iran and the current military of Iran. They are the best protection that Iran has at this time. Whether you agree with their politics or not, they are the best protection.
We have some questions from our viewers here. This is from Manchild. Do you see anything to be hopeful for, or is the region doomed for the foreseeable future? Does Israel deserve the right to exist? Two-part question.
No, Israel, if it ever had a right to exist, it has forfeited it many times over. Israel is a cancer, and the region needs to be cured of this cancer. That doesn't mean wiping out the Israeli Jewish population, of course. This means dismantling this regime by any and all means necessary. And those Israeli Jews who wish to stay and live in peace and coexist with the Palestinians, from my perspective, it's not up to me, but I would say you're welcome to stay. But if you're not prepared to live in peace as equals with the Palestinian people, then you need to find a new home. Get out.
Sort of like the post-apartheid South Africa solution?
Well, I think that the South Africa could have done a better job, frankly, of ensuring equality for the black, the indigenous population. But, you know, something in that direction. I think too many compromises were made. But to go back to the question, because I think this is very important, I actually am very hopeful for the future of the region. There's going to be a lot more suffering to come, sadly to say. But I think this is their best opportunity, and I think they're winning. And ultimately, this could prove to be the final blow to the U.S. empire.
Would love that. Another question before we let you go from Flanderina. Do you think they actually want Hezbollah to be disarmed, or do you think they want Lebanon to devolve into civil war? Israel generally benefits from chaos in the Middle East, or at least they think they do. Is this more of pushing chaos?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the first preference of the Israelis is always just to take the land. And if they can't take the land and seize exclusive control over it, their next option is civil war and devolve into chaos, do what they did to Syria. They're trying to do it to Lebanon. They're trying to do it to Iran. But I just don't see them succeeding in that regard. I think the odds right now are greatly favor the resistance.
Dimitri, do you have plans to return to Lebanon anytime soon?
I don't have definite plans, but I will definitely go back within the near future. Absolutely. To be honest with you, I keep going back to this region. I've been in Iran twice. I've been in Lebanon five times since the genocide. I've been in Iraq, Jordan, because it's incredibly inspiring. I don't see any other part of the world. I mean, there are many brave, courageous people putting up resistance to injustice all around the world, but this particular part of the world is really something.
Dimitri, where can people find your work?
My main gig is Reason to Resist. That's our YouTube channel. And on X, you can find me at Dimitri Liscaris.
Dimitri, thank you so much for joining us on Deprogram. We really appreciate you and hope you'll come back.
Thank you. We'll do.